Hey, hey, influencer, welcome back to part two of our interview with Jonathan Mizell. And in case if you missed part one yesterday, this is something that you'll definitely want to go back and check out because he shared just some really fun stories as well as amazing insights and inspiration on how to create better marketing campaigns. Now, in today's part, in part two, you'll get to hear what's even more important than psychographics in order to understand your customers, and how to get a really deep understanding on really what your prospects actually want. We also talked about what a low click-through rate really means for finding hidden pockets of profit in your business, and the key differences in building an effective sales funnel for leads when they're coming from Facebook ads versus Google AdWords ads. We also talked about how to break through the distraction factor on social media and how to trust jack other people's email lists. We also talked about how to adjust your content so that you can charge more for it. So without any further ado, here's Jonathan Mizell. This is Esther Kish.
And this is Meta Muller.
And you just caught the latest episode of Born to Influence, the marketing show.
So what about psychographics? What about in terms of, how people think and behave and so forth? How do we figure that out?
You're good, because that was my third point. So,
sorry.
It is, actually. I had forgotten about it. Now, you jog my memory. So once you have somebody in mind and you figure out who your avatar is, it doesn't mean that you know how to actually speak to them. Now, the internet is so fantastic because, especially with 2.0 properties and or whatever we call them now, everything's got a feedback loop built into it. And some of those feedback loops are manipulated, like review sites and stuff. But you can go to blogs, you can go to discussion boards, you can go to, comment areas where people are actually speaking. So if it is something like fashion accessories, you can go to, Go Fug Yourself or, Gawker Media or one of those websites that's, all about fashion. And you can then do an Alexa search to make sure that the demographics are on target. And then you just you watch the language. You look at what people say. The psychographics, I think more important than psychographics are the language patterns that people use. Back to that whole, weight loss example where we have 10 different keywords and some groups would just never use those words. So figure out what language your avatar is speaking in, even to the point where we've gone on to blogs and then found comment fields and then posted a kind of a crazy comment and just to see what people would say. And, I don't want to say we're inciting people, but we are kind of a little bit. Maybe we're just stirring the waters or stirring up the pot a little bit just to see what they're really speaking about, what they're really interested in, and how they talk. Especially the language part is so important because once you understand the language, the keywords that they look for, the keywords that they search for, and then you use that in your advertising, you have such an advantage over other marketers who haven't done any of that research or who think that the world is their prospect.
So what about the role of intuition? Because this is, I absolutely love this side of marketing is figuring out who your ideal client is, who your target market is, and so forth, because it really allows us to get underneath the skin of a lot of people, right? And we can't, we can do a lot with market research. We can do a lot with looking at the language they use, looking at where they hang out, what they do, and so forth. But But at some point, we need to get a bit deeper and really look at, well, what is in their secret thoughts? What is there that they're not saying in the forums and so forth? So how do we get to that? Do we just need to be, good people, that we know people very well and have an intuition of people? Or are there any tips or tricks that you can offer to really get into people's secret thoughts?
There's a really great comment about copywriting. I can't remember who made it, but it said, great copywriters don't create a conversation. They join the conversation already going on in the prospect's head.
Because if
you're trying to, usurp someone's thoughts, ultimately we are in control of our own thoughts. And people will just say, I'm not interested in that, or leave me alone, or they'll click off your web page. So the first one really is surveys. And finding out figuring out who your customers are, once there is a bit of guesswork with avatars and with profiles, and you do have to kind of take some leaps of faith. So that's where the intuition comes in. But your intuition can be disproved down the line when you actually start selling stuff and then you survey people based on why they bought. But even more important than surveying people is split testing. And it's taking two messages and saying this message here and there's this message here and we're going to split and half of the people are going to go here and half of the people are going to go here and we're going to see which message they actually resonate with more, because that's really the proof. It's nice that people look at your banner ad, and it's nice that they click on it, and it's even nice that they opt into your sales funnel, but until they actually buy, it's all just conjecture. And so, when you're able to, and the tools have gotten, I can't tell you, back when we were first starting, to do a split test was like, it was practically impossible. It was just the most difficult thing in the world. Now the tools we have will let you see with relative ease what people are interested in. Take fashion, for example. Let's say you have the fashion accessory and you go into Facebook and you do a big audience, right? You say, give me the hashtag fashion audience. I don't know what that is. I'm guessing it's probably 5 million people who have said they're interested in fashion. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you take the smaller audience. Maybe you've got 300,000 or 400,000. But you're dealing with more than a couple of people. Yeah. Now you can take your Facebook Power Editor, the little tool that the media buyers use to actually run Facebook ads, and you can just, you can just cut and paste and just change the headlines. So you can have the same ad with 100 different headlines or 50 different headlines or, different pictures or whatnot. And you can put that out there and start running it to it has to be a big audience, right? You can't run 100 ads to an audience of 100 people. But if you've got a big audience, and you have some idea of who the demographics are, then you can really start to pick up some ideas of what's on people's mind, what are they resonating with, what do they want to click on, and ultimately what do they want to buy. That's another thing, because now we're able to track, again, the ease of tracking, all the way through to the sale. And we've also found plenty of times where someone a group of people will click on an ad, but they won't opt in, or they'll click and they'll opt in, but they won't buy. And then there will always be one ad or two ads that they have a very low click-through rate, but 20% of the people who get through the funnel purchase the product. Mm-hmm. And so that's where you can say, okay, here's this pocket of profit in this group of buyers. And that's really how we do it.
So what does it mean when you've got a low click-through rate, but the opt-in, the conversion rate is quite high? Does it mean that you are just targeting a bit too broadly? What exactly goes on when you get an ad result like that?
When you see a result like that, I mean, if the overall ROI of that is the case, then, if it's high, then you don't even worry about it. I mean, markers have this you know, ego thing where it's like my click-through rate was, you know, this, or my opt-in rate, you know, I got an 80% opt-in rate. Well, of course, you're promising, you know, a free bar of gold and you're mailing your best customers. I mean, it better be 80%. But, you know, if you really look at just breaking things down from an ROI basis, you can throw away all those other metrics. Mm-hmm. Those other metrics are indicators of interest. Those metrics are that you're on the right track. Those other metrics are fun. They're good to throw around at seminars, but they're not ultimately, you know, what makes it. If you do have, let's say you test 100 ads and two or three are highly profitable, they have a low click-through rate, you pause all the ads except for those two, and then you take those two elements, those two ads, and you make 50 ads just for those two ads. And you start tweaking the pictures, and you start tweaking the body copy. And then once you get the click-through rate on those up, then you start playing around with your landing page or your offer if you're just going straight into the offer. Sometimes you just link straight to the page. It's a pretty easy sale. Maybe it's a $10 or $20 item, something like that. And then you can get your traffic and your conversion at the same time. But we're constantly looking at what works, what doesn't work, and from an ROI standpoint, what actually brings in the profits.
I have a big question here. So you mentioned that if it's a lower price product, like $10 or $20, then you can drive that traffic directly to the where they can actually buy that item. Now, what I hear from a lot of marketers and especially people who are dealing with PPC ads is that you really, if you go on Facebook or one of the social media platforms, you need to drive them towards something free first to get them at least on the list and then buy, then sell them something. Do you see it as a differentiation more in terms of whether you are using social media or versus, let's say, Google AdWords, or would it be more of the price point, or is it different by industry? How do you know what to offer?
I think it's different by industry, but it's interesting how you would target those two. I'm certain that on a site like Facebook, where it's more of a coffee shop environment, where it's more of a social place as opposed to a commerce place, that telling a story, I don't know that I would give something. You know, there's a lot of different sales funnels. And if it's a cheap product, maybe the ad goes into an article or a review, and then maybe there's just a link at the bottom and, you know, you sell the product directly. And you can test this now where you can say, send half of the traffic to the landing page and then send half of the traffic through to the sales page. And so you really have to look at your environment. So on Facebook, we almost always use a landing page. Sometimes it's a squeeze page. Sometimes it's an article. Sometimes it's just a page where it's an article. And the only call to action is we're cooking you so we can deliver banners to you later on. Mm-hmm. Right? So there's all kinds of little tweaks to the funnel. But what we found is that on Facebook, you need to ease people into your sales funnel a little bit more slowly. On Google, if I type in, you know, plumber leak Maui emergency, you know, I don't want to read an article or opt into. I don't need to go into your sales funnel. I mean, I want a plumber. I got a leak. You know, come over right now. And so there's the immediacy of the need. It's the old Yellow Pages example is great. You know, you don't go through the Yellow Pages looking for transmission shops, because someday you might need a transmission shop. Right. You go in there when you need a transmission, you know, for your car because it just conked out. So Google definitely has this immediacy, and we found that landing pages can work very well with Google as well, but they're not nearly as necessary as they are in a social environment. Twitter is another one. If you try to direct link and sell from a Twitter thing, unless it's a very highly targeted Twitter list, mm-hmm. you know, it's. I mean, you're taking people out of an environment where they are living in a 140-character world, and you're sending them into this, you know, 45-minute video sales letter or this 10-page letter. No, I think you need to chunk things up into a process where you're giving people a little bit of the information, and then seeing if they click through. Another reason we use sales funnels is because we want to see if we're actually on the right target. If we get people into our, to click, say, use the Twitter example, to a landing page or an article or a review, and nobody clicks through to the next page, we know that, you know, we either didn't target them correctly there, or we didn't have the right message, or maybe if it was even too long in that landing page, which is why with social stuff, it's usually social, click, to short lander, to squeeze, or a longer process. But it's not direct from, hey, do you want to buy this thing, to, hey, do you have 45 minutes? Because nobody has 45 minutes until you've sold them on the idea that they should spend 45 minutes listening to your message.
And particularly, I think, on Facebook and Twitter, because the people are, like you said, so used to having the new piece of information and a new piece of content coming per second. They have, every time you refresh, you have like 5 new posts that you come in your news feed. So they're just, it helps our ADD, but it doesn't help the marketers. So you really have to go in a gradual way. So
it's true, yeah. And people, some of the media we use, especially with social media or some of the cheap media, the distraction factor is so high that you really have to break through the distraction factor, but you need to do it in little chunks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So last time,
I think...
Go ahead.
My turn? No, I wanted to ask you what, you know, personally speaking, what is your favorite advertising channel?
Probably email. It is so fast. It is so immediate. I mean, it's just, you know, the ability to really talk to the people. I mean, when we do, most of the email we do is solo ads. And so most of those solo ads or sponsorships, but most of those solo ads, if they're done correctly, if you're allowed to put the copy in and you're not like just putting a banner somewhere, it's really like a trust jack. Like you're hijacking the trust of the solo ad publisher. And you have to be responsible. You can't, you know, screw over their people. You have to deliver on your promises. And if you say you're going to give them a free video or a free report, you've created this huge expectation. But when someone says, hey, there's this great new course, and I think you should go check it out. It's by my friend Jonathan Mizell. And, you know, and there's a free video, and here's the link. When someone does that, you now, this isn't someone who was maybe interested slightly in this thing. This is someone who went into their email box, didn't delete the thing, read it, and said, oh, I'm interested in that, clicked on it. So there's a real, I would say the contextual bridge is a lot more stable than it is with a PPC ad. And if we look at opt-in rates, which is probably the best indication of interest, and we look at like what kind of opt-in rates do we see for banners and text ads, just general crap on the internet, you know, it's 5-10%. And if we look at, hang on, I don't know if that's my thing. If we look at banner ads, maybe it's 15%. Social, maybe 20-25%. When we look at opt-in email and solo ads, we start to see opt-in rates on the same offer of, you know, 40, 50, 60% because the traffic is being driven in such a, it's really being pushed in as opposed to being pulled in. It's like, hey, are you interested in this? That's what the banner ad says. Are you interested? Maybe. So you click on it and then, oh, yeah, no, I'm not really interested, you know, and then people leave. But when you say in someone's inbox, hey, I want you to go here because there is this thing that I want you to check out, there's this course or there's this video or there's this report or there's something that I want you to experience, now it's not only recommended, but it's like, okay, this is what we're doing now, right? Because when we're on a website, you know, if take the weight loss example, there was one of the things we talk about in our course is, you know, there's a woman, there's an article on how to put on eye makeup. Well, the woman is thinking about her eyes, not her thighs, right? And so when you're saying, hey, your thighs are more important than your eyes, she's like, no, I'm on Mom Cafe reading a story about my eyes. Don't bother me. Leave me alone.
Yep.
So they're already distracted, whereas opposed to the email, it's just significantly more powerful. We just had a client yesterday ask us how to fill up his seminar. And so we talked to him about using Facebook. And I said, you know, the Facebook thing is great, and I totally think you should do it, but really all you need is one or two great partners with a big list.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could fill up that seminar if you had a real influencer, and you just called the influencer and said, I'll give you 100% commission to put seats into my seminar.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, oh, my God, well, where could I find such a list? And I said, well, look on your list to see who you know who is an influencer who you might be able to get them to do that. And I said, and they'll do it because you're going to pay them to do it.
Okay.
And so that's really it. I would say email in terms of influence, which is the topic here, I would say email not only displays your ability to influence people to mail for you, but it really takes their influence and it rides along their influence and actually, makes the whole message seem stronger. Mm-hmm. You know, when I do a mailing to, if I could mail Frank Kern's list, I would probably do pretty well because we have, very similar customers and we're friends and things like that. But if Frank did that mailing for me, no telling, how much better it would be.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's his audience. If
they have
I
a
did
relationship.
A mailing, yeah, if I did a mailing for him or I did a mailing for anybody to my people, they'd be like, oh, well, God, I better pay attention to this. It seems like, it might be important for me.
Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, because you mentioned influencing the influencers, who are some of the people that influenced you, some of the mentors or coaches or people that you looked up to and you look up to?
Probably Gary Halbert was the most, in terms of copywriting, the thing with advertising is that some of the mentors, they have a little shady past, so you have to look at the things that they've done, and you have to say, okay, well, I'm not going to do that thing, but I will do this thing, right? Gary Halbert has a very crazy past. He passed away a few years ago, but he definitely wasn't on everyone's favorite guy list. But he was a real influencer in terms of teaching me. He said something. He said, you're only one great sales letter away from $1 million. And I remember working on one sales letter, years and years ago, and that sales letter went on to make us, $3 or $4 million, but a significant amount of money. And it was a short letter, but it was one of those things that we really had to work our tail off to get that thing down. I mean, for a two-page sales letter, you wouldn't think we had to spend 25 hours on it, but you do, because that's what you have to spend in order to make, a lot of money off of something. So Halbert was significant. And then Jay Abraham was very significant. There were two things we got from him. The first one was shortcut your success by finding the people that have achieved it and hire them.
Mm-hmm.
It was a powerful thing. Find the influencers in your marketplace and work with them. Rent their list. Do a joint venture with them. Hell, go to work for them. Figure out what you can do to get those customers, buy those customers, pay them 100% commission, shortcut that process and get those customers into your database by using other people's influence. And then the other thing that Jay did, and I know we'll talk about this later, is his strategy of preeminence, where it's about giving value before, and even if you're never going to get money from someone, if you know they're never going to give you money, just still give them value, still work with them. Some other ones were John Carlton, you know, we'd have to go back, but I really liked John Kennedy, John E. Kennedy, the copywriter from the early 1900s. John Caples is a phenomenally, you know, powerful copywriter, passed away a while back, has a book called Tested Advertising Methods. If you want to know how important headlines are, the first five chapters of his book are about headlines. And he, you know, significantly impacted me and my ability to write. And then, of course, the usual guys now. I mean, Frank Kern is someone is an amazing influencer. The guy that wrote Influence, Cialdini, Robert Cialdini.
Yeah.
You know, these are all people who had an impact on me and really, you know, really helped me see what's possible with direct marketing and also what's possible with me and my own personal power. And there's one other guy too, Dan Kennedy, which I know you guys have heard of Dan Kennedy. Mm-hmm. Dan Kennedy reminds me that, and all of us, that your value is not in your content. He's not in it, okay? It's so important to understand, because I had a friend ask me, he said, I got this $500 product, but I want to sell it for $1,000. How do I, what do I have to do to it to make it worth $1,000? You know, what do I have to add? I said, well, here's what you do. You take it, you cut the content in half, you charge $1,000 for it. That's how you do it. I mean, it's the quintessential Dan Kennedy answer, because when Dan Kennedy does a seminar, I don't know if he still does it like this, I could be wrong, but I mean, in the old days, when he'd do a seminar, he'd show up at 10, he'd listen, he'd go have lunch, you know, and then he'd come back for a few hours in the afternoon, and people would say, oh, it's the most incredible seminar in the world, the most incredible meeting, and I'd say, how much was it? They'd be, it was $10,000. I said, well, did Dan build your sales funnel for you? No. Did Dan write your copy for you? No. He wasn't even there most of the time. I said, well, why was it so valuable? He said, well, we got to sit in the presence of this amazing man, and he brought all these other people together. He said the big breakthroughs happened in the bar after he was already gone. It was with all the other people. And so that's a big thing, is that, you know, your ability to influence and your ability to deliver value is not always, I mean, sometimes it's somewhat, it's not always related to the content. And back to that joke, you know, if you want to take the $1,000 product and sell it for $10,000, cut the content in half again. And then if you want to sell it for $20,000, cut the content in half again. Because In a world of information overload, do you really think the world needs another 20-hour sales course? It doesn't. Hint.
Yeah.
So it's really, I think part of it is the psychology that people want always what they can't have. So, for example, if we are talking about Dan not being there part of the time during the seminar, that made him even more desirable. And also the connections that, well, you know.
No, it does, for sure.
And then the other thing is the connections, that being able to bring those people together, that's so much bigger than whatever you could do by yourself. Just facilitating that people can make connections between each other, and there is that group dynamic that makes the whole experience feel so much richer and more powerful, and something that you can take on outside of the seminar, and you can build on those relationships later.
That's right. And, you know, so Dan's mastermind group, at least the ones from, you know, seven, eight years ago, have spawned dozens of other mastermind groups. Joe Polish has his 25K group, and, you know, he doesn't even have to say how much it costs. It's called the 25K group. I mean, you know, if you're reading the sales letter, the close is, you know, kind of predetermined right there.
Yeah.
There was another group of people I did a presentation for a while back, and they were all Dan Kennedy people. And I said, why didn't you guys start this group? He said, well, we were all just sick of paying Dan Kennedy $10,000 to sit around and drink with each other. I said, oh, so did you quit Dan Kennedy's group? He said, no, we're still all members of Dan's group, too. I see. So, and we also, there's another breakaway group. So now I'm a member of two breakaway groups and Dan's group and this other thing and this other group. And so, but, you know, as entrepreneurs, most of us, at least a lot of us in the home, you know, who work from home, we don't have the connection with other people, and you need that connection. Forget just the socialization part. You know, you need to be able to bounce stuff off of people. I go meet with my web designer a couple times a year over in Colorado, and the best ideas come out when we're fly fishing or skiing or hiking. Or, you know, we were camping a couple of months ago in outside of Aspen, and, you know, just like in tents and by the campfire, and, you know, the ideas that came out just when you're with someone, and he's like, oh, did you ever think about doing this? Or what if we made the banner ad look like that? Or we could make the woman walk across it, or, you know, we could have things pop up a certain way. And, you know, I had to go grab my notepad and say, oh my God, we better test that. And so that's where some real brilliance does not come from you. There's that old saying, 1 + 1 = way more than one. And so if you do it correctly, there's you as an individual. 1 + 1 = 3. There's you, them, and then you together. And then you add a fourth person and a fifth person, and now you're creating this mastermind amongst people about, you know, that's back to your thing about metta, about intuition, which is I might not have the intuition about a particular avatar if that's not who I am, or if not my wife or one of my friends. But now you bring in someone who's younger or someone who's got a different background from you, they'll sometimes just hit it on the head. They'll say, why don't you just say blank? Or why don't you just tell them that, you know, X, Y, or Z? And you're like, oh, my God, we never even tested that. And they're like, well, okay, you know, give me a raise.
Nice. So, Jonathan, our time is about to run out here, unfortunately, but I so appreciate that you were here. And I really want to ask one last question, and that is, how can we become more influential through our marketing?
So I want to go back to that strategy of preeminence. And it's a very important, you know, concept. And the strategy basically says that you will give value before you get any money, and in spite of the fact that you might not. And people say, oh, I've heard that before, but I want to really narrow it down. If you are a lawyer or a CPA or an investment banker, or if you're an insurance agent, you have what's called a fiduciary responsibility. This is a financial responsibility to take care of someone. Like, you are, like, in some cases, like if you're their CPA, you are legally obligated to help them and to not let them lose money and to influence them and help them to make money, because your responsibility isn't like, I'm just going to give you some value. Hey, set up a squeeze page. You have a financial interest in helping them, and not the kind of interest that you're going to get paid. You consider that you are their CPA, or you're their highly paid trusted advisor, even though they haven't given you any money. Now, are you going to sell them some junk? Are you going to take them down a path that, you know, screws them over? Are you going to waste their time? No. If you think of people where you have a responsibility to take care of them financially, and you think of them as your mom. You know, someone asked me, they said, when I was first starting in the business, they said, would you sell this product to your own mother? And I said, absolutely.
Yeah.
And he said, okay, I'll buy it. And I said, oh, my God, I never even thought of that. So, like, I created what I call the Mama Mizell test. And now when I see a product, or there's an affiliate thing, or there's something I want to promote, I say, would I send this to my own mother? Would I tell her about it? Am I proud of it enough to actually give it to my best friend or a family member or my own mom? Am I living up to my strategy of preeminence where I've got a fiduciary responsibility? If the answer is yes, I know that I'll do it. And when you take that approach, you cannot help but influence. So to say, you know, how do you influence? You stop thinking about influence and you really think about service and really how to serve people in their best interest, even if it's not in your own best interest. And that's how you become, in my opinion, a great influencer.
I love that. Thank you. Thank you so much, Jonathan, for being here and for being so generous with your time and advice and insights here. And I'm wondering, if people want to meet you or work with you or find out more, where do they go?
Well, probably the best thing to do right now is to just go to trafficevolution.com. And, you know, if we're open, you can buy the product. If we're not, you can sign up and get on the list. We've really decided to focus just on two projects. And so we really don't work with clients anymore unless, you know, they happen to be a great fit for one of those projects and we can actually work together, you know, in that particular space. You can go to cyberwavemedia.com, and if the form is up, then you can fill out the form and we'll get back to you. But probably the best way to work with us is to just pick up the Traffic Evolution product, and that will give you our philosophy, our strategy, and really kind of our mindset of how we do business. It goes into a lot more than just traffic. We talk about the avatar, the customer profile, the targeting, creating your market before you create your product. It really is kind of the essence of what we're all about at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll definitely link that all up in the show notes. Thank you so much for coming here. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. What a delight. And thank you for getting me on my very first Google Hangout.
Oh, welcome. This is a whole new world.
I feel 20 years younger.
Okay. I'm glad we could help out in that
okay, life area. Well, thank you. Thank you both very much, and aloha.
Well, that concludes our interview with Jonathan Mizell. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. I know I had great fun talking with Jonathan. And I wanted to thank you so much for all the wonderful messages and reviews that you've been leaving on our iTunes page, as well as in private messages and emails. I really, really appreciate it. And so does Meta as well. And I wanted to ask you, if you haven't yet, hop on over to iTunes or Stitcher Radio, your preferred platform, whichever it is, and hit the subscribe button, because that way you'll get to have all the episodes automatically delivered to you, so you don't even have to worry about it. And it also helps us get Born to Influence higher up on the charts so that more entrepreneurs and business owners just like yourself can find out about this kind of amazing content. And while you're at it, if you would leave us a quick review, I would very, very much appreciate it, and so would Meta as well. So thank you so much. Have a beautiful weekend, and I'll see you on Monday. Same time, same place.